You're listening to
Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Hey, what's going on? Talking with Darren Wall from a couple of killer bands, from the band that he's actually wearing the t-shirt of, Skeletor, and from Greyhawk. Darren, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man, all things considered. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm kind of holed up here in the cave, the bedroom, kind of just doing the whole stay-at-home thing, but you've been deemed essential, my friend. You are on the job. What is this essential task that you provide for the world?
So I work in, just to put it simply, I work in fire safety. So I do building inspections, specializing in kitchen fire suppression equipment. Today I was working with the Salvation Army, getting their trucks up and ready to go for our makeshift hospital that's coming in at Shoreline, which will have 1,000 beds for people. So, you know, it is, I mean, some of, we do have to isolate, but some of us have to get out there and fight this thing on the front lines, right? So
absolutely, man. Dude, that's really intense. But how did everything go with the Salvation Army today? I saw your post, and that's really incredible that they're going to be using that for a temporary hospital.
Yeah, well, that truck's going to be feeding our doctors and nurses on the front lines, where they're going to have, I guess it's going to be set up somewhere in Edmund Shoreline or something like that. And yeah, they just had that truck, and it had some fire suppression equipment from like the 90s. So it needed a complete overhaul and update. So that's what I was doing all morning, just getting that thing up to code and making sure it was safe for our people to go out there and, you know, help out and fight the good fight.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, that's important work. I'm stoked that, you know, I'm not stoked that you have to work. That sucks. But at the same time, like, it's good that there's people like you that are willing to do that and to literally risk your lives at this point. So, how are you holding up? I've seen your posts about accountability and stuff, about, doing home workouts and whatnot. How are you holding up, like, mentally? Are you doing okay?
Yeah, you know, like everyone, there's good days and bads, right? You know, some days are just fine. Some days it's really tough. It's tough to not see my bandmates. It's tough not to play bass guitar really loud. It's tough to not go hang out in Georgetown with all my friends and all that kind of fun stuff. It's tough not to go to gigs. You know, I'm sure you feel the same way about that one. But yeah, it's just a matter of making the most of it, you know, looking at this downtime as a time for self-improvement. I mean, I can't go to the gym. I'm a gym junkie. I have to lift weights every day. So getting creative and, you know, making dip stations around the house with, you know, kitchen tables and chairs and whatnot and, you know, improvising. It's kind of fun. It's harder to get motivated at home because, you know, all your fun toys are around and you can just get distracted. Whereas the gym, it's like you get in, God, I just want to go there, get done, get out as soon as possible. So it's a little easier to stay focused there. But, you know, it's I like to post about it every night just to keep myself accountable. Then if I don't make a post, everyone knows I slacked off.
Yeah, man. Everyone else will hold you accountable too. So
exactly. That's the point. And, you know, maybe just we're all in this together and some people, you know, I think maybe need to hear some ideas or inspiration to say, hey man, this isn't the end of all things. We could still do a lot of cool stuff, even though we're stuck in a weird situation.
Yeah, I would agree, man. And what would you suggest your like go-to best home workout for anyone that wants to really just let go some of them aggression and just get a good pump at home?
So here's the funny thing that I did. I'm a home brewer. So
that's awesome.
I have kegs at home. So I've been filling the kegs up with water and just using those as barbells, dumbbells, and just throwing them around. And, you know, everything short of a keg toss in the backyard I've been doing, but I've been using them for overhead presses, bicep curls, squats, deadlifts, whatever, you know, just if I want to do a heavy deadlift, I'll just grab four of them at a time and just go for it. So that's kind of the most creative thing I've done so far to get through, but just use what you have, you know, look around you. If you have two chairs, that's a dip station. If you have two chairs and some form of like a shovel or something, that can be a pull-up bar. You know, you just got to make do with what you got.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Get creative. Necessity breeds creativity. It's what I've been saying this week. But I mean, we're kind of burying the lead here, dude. You guys got a big announcement today on the Greyhawk. Officially, you guys are going to be on Fighter Records out of Spain. Keepers of the Flame is your new album. You guys announced it. You debuted a track today, right?
Yes, we did. It's a one called Don't Wait for the Wizard. It's kind of a, how to describe it. It's just old school metal. It's really fun. It's really positive. It's kind of like, I showed it to Jason from Skeletor. And he was like, is this a Stryker song? And I was like, hey, that's a huge compliment because Stryker yeah. for us.
That's awesome, man. So yeah, we
put that out today and people have been pretty stoked so far.
That's really cool, man. And how long has the, how long have you had to keep this information like kind of at bay and keep it to yourselves like a secret?
Well, the signing happened in January, I want to say.
Nice.
We finished up, we started recording, this album went pretty quick, actually. We started recording in October, finished up in December. I started shopping it late December. We had a few offers, a lot of rejections, because that's the way it always goes.
Yeah.
You know, a million people are going to say no, you just need one person to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the guy, Dave, from Fighter, who also runs a label, a death metal label called Extreme Music out of Spain too, who put out a lot of really cool albums. They were called Repulsed Records in the 90s.
Cool.
And they put out, like, I remember them because they put out the first couple Deeds of Flesh records way back in the day.
Hell yeah.
So he was just the most enthusiastic about it. You know, he's like, this album rules. I want to put it out. I don't want to play around with negotiations. We'll do CD, we'll do vinyl, we'll do all this fun stuff. And like, let's just make a record, guys. So we were like, yeah, all right. And he just seemed, sometimes you just want someone in your corner that really likes what you do more than anything.
Yeah.
So we believe in him. He's in a couple metal bands himself, you know, so we trust him. He's a musician as well. He's not out to take our money. So I think it's going to be awesome.
Ah, man, I'm looking forward to it. It's cool to have somebody that's kind of like on your level and is a artist. It's that's neat, man. That's cool.
Yeah, he definitely has a different perspective than some label guys I've met before and worked with, because he knows what he wants, which is going to be similar to what other people who are in his position want, right? So it's really cool. And having all those years of experience too, he's been doing it since like 1993 or something. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. Damn, dude. That's been a long time coming. So the new single is out now. Are you cool with me attaching it to the end of this little interview here?
Yes, please do.
All right, man. So stay tuned to the end of the interview. I'm going to attach that. And you know what? Don't sue me because I got the permission right here. This is a binding contract. What are you drinking, by the way? Is that your homebrew? I don't think it is.
No, this is a Cosmic Waves IPA from Silver City. Good local stuff.
Oh, from Bremerton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. They're great. They make great beer. And it's this one of the things that I like in a brewery is that when they make a good, affordable product that's readily available. I mean, lots of breweries make the super fancy stuff, and that's cool mm-hmm. too. But, you know, I don't want to line up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday to buy it or it's sold out. So,
right.
If I can get it and it's delicious and it's at the grocery store, I'm good.
So you're a beer aficionado, but you're not a beer snob.
Correct. I'll drink. We drink Tecate Light in band practice, so whatever.
Cool. So let's get a little bit of a history of you, man. Let's get some. Let's go back to the journey of how little Darren got into metal. What was kind of like your light bulb moment, dude? Like, when did you? And you know, I'm assuming you probably didn't start, you know, out of the womb listening to Hammer Smash Face. What was the spotlight? Like when did you wake up to underground music?
Well, there's a couple of key moments I can pinpoint, and it's one of them was when I was 6 years old, and I'm from Canada originally. So yeah. We were watching a music video show. It was called Video Hits up there and back in the day on the CBC. And the video for I Love It Loud by Kiss came on.
Nice.
And I was like, man, that wasn't like anything I'd ever seen. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. So I loved Kiss from a very, very early age. And from there, I got into hard rock, like Van Halen and AC/DC and all that stuff. And then the next one was in high school. I'd saved all my money. I'd worked all summer and I saved up enough money for a 5-disc CD changer, dual cassette and FM radio stereo unit, right? Like, which was the, you know, the duck's nuts back in the day.
Oh my God.
So
Yeah.
I had all this money and yeah. And I was like, and I had no more money for CDs, but my dad was really proud. He said, here, have some money, go down to the record store, buy a couple CDs. So I knew I was going to buy an AC/DC album. So I picked one of those up. I don't remember which one, but the guy at the record store was like, hey man, you like metal? Why don't you just pick something out of the metal section you've never heard before? Take a chance on something. And
that's always good. Yeah.
I don't know why I bought it. There's no particular reason or background, but I bought Black Sabbath's We Sold Our Soul for Rock and Roll, the greatest hits thing. I don't know why, I just bought it. And then on the way home, I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, why did I buy this? This is stupid. I should have bought another AC/DC record or something. I'm just gonna play this once and probably put it away and that'll be that. So I hit the random play button. It lands right on Iron Man.
Yes. And
my brain melted.
Like, yeah.
It was just, my jaw was on the floor. I didn't know you could make music like that. And it's what I was looking for. I didn't know I was looking for it, but I was so obsessed with that riff that, because I had a Walkman, there's no Discmans back then. I had a Walkman. So I dubbed a tape that was Iron Man on side A all the way through and Iron Man on side B all the way through so I could walk around at school and just listen to that song on repeat and just have my mind blown over and over and over again. And then from there, it was on to War Pigs, then Fairies Wear Boots, and, you know, NIV, and on and on and on. One song at a time. It took me a year to get through that album. I was just flabbergasted by how it sounded.
Wow.
So dude, that was kind of my intro to that. And then, you know, Pantera kind of taught me more about extreme music, that music could sound harsh and awesome at the same time, you know. Hell yeah, dude. There it is. But, you know, it taught me that, you know, you could, music could be really aggressive, like really aggressive.
Yeah.
Which then leads to Slayer, which then leads into Morbid Angel and the death metal and black metal. And then kind of comes full circle back to getting into more melodic stuff. Like I didn't get into kind of Maiden and Priest until later, but then that led into power metal and just liking everything, you know?
Well, I saw you at the Ross the Boss show getting your Man of War vinyl signed by Ross the Boss, man. That must have been a pretty cool moment, like opening for Ross the Boss, right?
Oh, dude. It was full circle because, you know, in 2019, me and Jason from Skeletor went to Germany to see Man of War.
That's awesome.
So we went over there and saw them, and of course, Ross isn't playing with them no more. And then to come back here and be able to open with them, not just in Seattle, but in Vancouver, BC as well, two nights in a row. And just to hear him play some of those old classics, like I never thought I'd hear Bridge of Death live, like by Man of War or anyone else, but they played it. And yeah, it was, his band was amazing too, man. Like,
yeah,
that bass, is that the bassist from Symphony X or something he had, I think?
I couldn't tell you, but I wouldn't be surprised.
He was phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal. And their singer was great. And yeah, I was really blown away by it.
That's awesome, man. So you said you originally grew up in Canada. Oh, what province?
Mm-hmm. British Columbia.
And what brought you to Seattle?
Marriage. Like I met my wife in 2015, and we dated long distance across the border for a while, and then decided, well, you know, we either got to kind of put up or shut up because we're going to have to live in the same city eventually. And I was really falling in love with Seattle, you know. I love Canada and I miss a lot of things about it, but I really fell in love with the city when I was coming down here, you know, the music scene and the beer scene, the food scene, and just how everyone's just really cool. You know, I'm a big neighborhood guy. So hanging out in Georgetown, the South End really struck a chord with me, you know, I love the vibe down there, you know, and Seattle's just a great place to be.
So Georgetown, that's your neighborhood, huh?
Yes, sir.
Right on, man. Best place to eat in Georgetown. What would you say?
Ooh, it's a lot. So I'd say the best place to eat is Fonda La Katrina, I think. That food is amazing. And we don't have Mexican food in Canada, right?
So like, okay.
People tell me that it's like, we don't have Mexican food in Seattle. I'm like, man, you don't know what not having Mexican food is all about. Go north of the border. Nothing. There's the odd taco time up there. That's about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's that, and best places to drink are Full Throttle Bottles and the 9 Pound Hand. It's a great neighborhood.
That's awesome, man. Well, you are a busy dude. Not only do you have a pretty intense day job, but you also are about to release the Greyhawk record. Tell me a little bit about, so last year Skeletor, you guys finally released Cyber Metal, which is a kick-ass record. How long were you guys working on that one?
Oh God, that was a while. I mean, Skeletor, when I joined them, were kind of doing the rotating door of bassists. They had a couple guys in and out, and they've been writing that album since Raw was in the band. So that was two bassists to go. I mean, they've been...
Raw's my upstairs neighbor. He lives right there.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, Raw's a great guy.
Hi, Raw.
But they were writing that, and he was still in the band, which was a couple of years by the time I joined. And, you know, they've just been going at it for a long time. So when I joined, it was kind of like, okay, we got to put our heads down and get this thing out there. Because, you know, at that point, it had been 3 years since King of Fear. So we really had to buckle down. And, you know, it's an interesting thing when a band has songs have been sitting around for that long, you know, and me coming in, they're new for me, and they're not for those guys. So they're kind of like, oh, we just got to get this done. But in the end, everyone really rallied. And I think we did a really good job of recording that one. The enthusiasm on it is really good. The energy is really good. And I'm hella proud of that record, man. I think it's great.
Dude, it's a kick-ass record. I actually need to dig in a little bit more. Now that I have some more time and I'm not just like focused on my day job, I have more time to revisit some killer records from last year. I think I need to do that. So,
yeah, for sure. There's some I need to dig into as well.
Yeah, what have you been digging, man? I know you stay, you know, relatively up to date with new stuff, I would assume. Like what are some bands that you've been digging? What's on your playlist? You know, for the last couple of weeks or months.
Really wicked doom records that have come out. The last Crypt Sermon record was awesome, man. It was like really old school Candlemass style doom done. Really,
what was the band? Well.
Crypt Sermon.
Oh yeah, that's a killer record, man. That's a killer record.
The one's really good. There's a band I got into recently called Smolder. They're from Canada.
Okay, I've heard the name.
An EP as well. Yeah, they're really good. It's another doom band. And oh god, this is killing me because the name's slipping my mind. It'll come back to me. But there's another doomier band from Boise that I heard recently, and they have a really interesting take on the genre. It's a little more melodic, a little more atmospheric, but the name will come to me. It's on the tip of my tongue.
We'll circle back to that.
In a couple questions, I'll be like, hey, that band is called.
So something else you've been doing with all your downtime is you've been watching WrestleManias. Are you doing the full rewatch? Because you start with WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2, WrestleMania 3. Are you just going to go all the way up through it?
Yeah, I'm on 5 now, man. I'm partway through 5. It's been really interesting revisiting those old school matches, man, because they're short.
You know,
back in the day, everything was all about... It was the spectacle, right? It was the big man, you know? Mm-hmm. They had a lot of, like, 3-minute matches, possibly because these guys are so huge, they blow up after 2.5
minutes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, but it was, you know, but it was interesting. Like, they put a lot more time into developing personas and characters. Like, you know, WrestleMania 1, King Kong Bundy came out, and he wrestled Special Delivery Jones and squashed him in, like, 1.5 minutes, right? And it's like... The next year he's in the main event against Hogan, right? So they were already building him for that spot against Hogan a year prior at WrestleMania.
Isn't that crazy?
It seems like they don't really do that anymore. They just kind of storylines jump around a lot.
Oh yeah. Well, my question for you
is
Are you going to be watching WrestleMania 36 with no audience this Saturday and Sunday live from the WWE Performance Center, empty? So we've heard of the Attitude Era and the Golden Era. Now it's the empty arena era.
The empty era. Yeah. I'm definitely not going to miss that. I'm super intrigued.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to be here anyway, but I'm super intrigued as to what's that going to be like. Cause you know, the Raws and SmackDowns with it empty have been, I think AEW has done a bit of a better job with the empty arena.
I would agree.
Like they have some of the guys are on ringside and they've kind of turned it into a bit of a party with the other wrestlers out there and stuff. But I think they've done And their guys have done a better job with it. Maybe because it's in a bigger arena and it has kind of that open air feeling too.
Oh yeah.
WWE's, some of the guys have done well with it. Some of them really struggle, you know. Like I watched that promo Kevin Owens cut the other week. He was having a real hard time with the crowd not being there.
Yeah.
And I totally get that. Playing a show to six people is a lot harder than playing it to 600. So I totally get where they're coming from. But it's an interesting experiment, and it kind of like, I think the guys that have gone through NXT are going to do okay because they've probably had to do that a lot before in their training.
Indie crowds and
so
stuff.
So they probably had to cut. Yeah, they've had to come out and cut promos to that empty room before. So they're probably going to do okay. But the guys that haven't, I mean, they're probably going to have a bit of a hard time.
Well, the thing that happened today is Roman Reigns isn't going to be in the match anymore. So it's going to be Goldberg versus to be determined. Roman Reigns is out of the match. He did not feel comfortable. As you're familiar, he did. I'm sure you're familiar. He had leukemia and he beat leukemia, but because of that, he's immunocompromised. Wrestling during this time with that kind of immune system is probably a very smart thing to do, and he didn't feel comfortable. So we'll see who Goldberg faces. Maybe it'll be Goldberg versus Gilbert.
Maybe. I mean, he's definitely too old now, but I mean, Bret Hart had some not nice things to say about Goldberg on Steve Austin's podcast the other day. So he basically said, for that, did you see that?
I haven't seen that yet.
Broken Skull Sessions. Oh, he basically said, for that guy to be in the Hall of Fame after he injured so many people is a straight up disgrace.
Oh my God.
He had some real, real not nice things to say about him. So I don't know, maybe Bret's coming out of retirement for one.
Oh my God. Can you imagine? Holy crap. That would be Bret Hart. Somebody would get hurt. Bret Hart versus Goldberg. Wow.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So what are your, what's your Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling then?
My top four?
Yeah.
Oh, well, being Canadian, I have to put Bret up there for sure.
Okay.
And I'll actually put Owen up there as well because he was always one of my favorites growing up. And I thought Owen was an amazing technical wrestler who never really got his due. I put Steamboat up there.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's the tough call? I guess you got to put Flair up there too. For me, probably my top four. Yeah.
All right. Well, then going along with that,
that was always.
Sorry, but what was that?
Go ahead.
Oh, going along with that theme of Mount Rushmore, top four, and whatnot. What's your big four? Mount Rushmore doom metal bands.
Doom bands. Okay. Cathedral.
Nice.
Put up there. Trouble.
Yeah.
Camel Mass.
Okay. Yeah. Hell yeah.
And I don't, a lot of people will say Black Sabbath. I don't think Black Sabbath is a doom band. They have that element to their music. They definitely, and all the doom bands are ripping them off, but I wouldn't put Sabbath up there as a doom band. Let's see. One more. What did I say? I said Cathedral, Trouble, Camel Mass. Crowbar.
Nice. And then your big four or your Mount Rushmore of power metal bands.
Well, Halloween's got to go. Yeah, there for sure. Gamma Ray. That's another one. You know, the Germans are really good at power metal. So yeah. I got to put them up there as well. For me, Hammerfall goes up there too. I think that one of the cool things Hammerfall did was really like refine power metal, make it a little choppier, a little more accessible, which to me is a good thing. And not a little more meat to the riffs, not as light and fluffy as I don't like the real. A lot of my friends love Rhapsody. I just can't do it.
No Sonata Arctica for you?
I like Sonata. You know, it's my old band in Canada played a few shows with them, but
okay,
not I wouldn't say they're in my top for power metal. So Halloween, Gamma Ray, Hammerfall, Age of Steel was another one, another one of my four, yeah.
Nice, dude.
The guy lost his marbles.
So we were talking a little bit about home workouts and stuff, and you're ripped as hell. You're a big dude. You're buff as all hell. What brought you down that world of lifting and you know, really strength training?
So I kind of in my 20s, you know, you're in your 20s, you can kind of eat and drink what you want and doesn't really matter. kind of that kind of thing. And I was working in kitchens a lot and, you know, drinking a lot of soda and, you know, not really eating right. And one day I just kind of looked in the mirror and I was like, man, that doesn't cut it. You know, I was always an athlete in high school and always was like, you know, really athletic. And I was like, I don't like this. So I started, you know, just exercising and, you know, started really just making it a part of, I've never enjoyed it. People are always like, you must love working out. Man, I hate it. Believe me, if I can get shredded, sitting on the couch, drinking whiskey, and listening to the records and eating chicken wings, damn right I'd be doing that every day. But, you know, you got to go sweat it out. And you got to eat the stuff that doesn't taste so good all the time, right? So, you know, I started doing that. And I started to get really serious a couple of years ago. And then just this year, you know, I've always was able to get like big, but never able to get ripped to get that look I wanted to get.
Yeah.
So I decided to seek some help. And I asked a buddy of mine, his name is Marco. He played in a couple of really awesome bands from Canada. He played in Blasphemy, played in a band called Tyrant's Blood, and another band called Witch's Hammer.
Very cool.
And he is like, I think he's in his 40s or 50s, and he looks like Superman. Like he is just, it looks like a Greek god. So I said, hey man, you know, he's a personal trainer too. So I said, hey man, tell me, this is what I'm doing. Tell me how I can do this better. So he just gave me a few tips on, you know, how to lift, how to plan my routine, how to eat a little better. And, you know, within about two, 3 months, people were like, dude, what have you been doing? Like, I'm starting to see some serious results here. I was like, well, you know, but sometimes you just got to reach out and ask somebody who really knows what's up, you know, like, that's, you know, for me, like it's like with guitar or bass or any kind of instrument. Sometimes, even if you have a really good practice regime and you're really dedicated, you can do the really reinforce the wrong thing. So if someone giving you a little bit of advice goes a long way.
Dude, that's cool, man. It's I certainly like to lift, but I am nowhere near as jacked as you are, and I haven't in a little while because gyms are not a safe place to go right now. So I should probably take you up on some of those home workout tips.
Please let me know. I'll definitely happy to share. But yeah, I do miss going to the gym just for the fact that it's, you know, I like that it keeps me motivated. It keeps me focused. But half the battle with home workouts is just actually getting off your couch and getting down to your basement or your kitchen or backyard and doing it. That's the whole battle.
So obviously, you know, there's no way of seeing what's the end of all of this, like what's the end, right? We don't know. That's the big thing is like, when, who knows? It's everything's unsure. In your opinion, what in the world will change due to the times that we're currently living in? Will there be changes in our behavior? Will there be changes in the way we treat each other? There will obviously be changes in probably economy for the years to come. What's going to change when we see the other side of this?
I think a lot is going to change. I mean, short term, I think in the short term, as far as people saying, when is this going to end? What's going to happen? I just think we're in for a really weird 2020. It's going to be a strange year. I think we've hit this is the most lockdown we're going to be. I don't think we're going to be locked down like this all year, but I definitely think that we're going to have a modified lifestyle through the rest of the year. I mean, that just is, and at the very least, until we have a reliable vaccine where we can immunize people and stop this stuff from happening, I think that we're looking at living different lives a little bit. But as far as long-term effects, I mean, one thing that this has shown is that we are not ready for something like this. And we really should be. Because if you think about, you know, a pandemic, a disease that's spreading really quickly via the air, via human contact or whatever, the obvious solution is to distance yourself, right? I mean, it's simple logic. That's how we figured that out. But we have no real plan in place for that. We have no real plan for the economic fallouts. We have no contingencies in place. Our politicians are doing the best they can, but they're making this up as they go. And in what we should
have, it's all patchwork, right?
Yeah, we should have a plan. Oh, we see something breaking out. Like, this is not the first time it's happened in history. It's like the 50th. We should have a plan where it's like, this is step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We lock stuff down. This is the reserve fund for the economy to deal with people being out of work. We freeze mortgage, we freeze rent. We do what we got to do to beat this thing. And it should be ready to roll out. And I think if we had policy and plans and stuff ready to roll out for something like this, people would be a lot less freaked out because we're just doing the plan. Now we're like, oh man, we're just doing this. So I think it's going to change the way we govern in that respect. We're going to hopefully start to prepare a little more. I think it's going to make, you know, we've seen the trend socially. We've seen social distancing is the term we're using, but people have been becoming more socially distant for years.
Yep.
For different reasons, due to technology, due to traffic, due to, you know, people moving out of the city, due to whatever, working more hours. But I think that this is when you realize how much they actually miss each other. And I think we're going to see people getting out to things more because you don't really, it's like the old Cinderella song, you don't know what you got till it's gone, right? I mean, I think people didn't realize that all these great things we had, we took it for granted, and now they're not there no more. And you know, maybe I don't see my friend down in Federal much, but now I can't. And that really sucks. And I really should have, right? So I hopefully it's going to bring people together a little bit more.
What are five things you're thankful for today, man?
Thankful for, you know, just still being here. I'm thankful for, you know, that I live with an awesome person. You know, I get to still wake up and see her every morning, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thankful and I'm also scared, but I'm thankful that I'm in a position where I can get out there and go on the front lines and help fight this thing. You know, that's something I am thankful for. I'm the kind of person where if there's something in danger, I'd rather me do it than someone else.
Yeah.
You know? So, I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for technology. I'm really thankful that we live in the age of social media. People were bashing it. I've always enjoyed social media. I know it comes with some downsides and people get annoyed by it, but I think it's one of the only things keeping us sane and keeping us together right now. I'm grateful for, you know, we can do stuff like this. And this is hella fun. Like this made my Thursday night fun rather than, you know, sitting on the couch, like staring at the wall. You know, this is now something that was the way to look forward to all day. I'm thankful that for technology, I'm thankful that lots of bands can still release awesome music. You know, we can still get tunes out there and provide some enjoyment for people.
Hey, man, that's a good point, dude. And there's so many people that just need a little bit of distraction, dude. We're all a little fed up and we're all a little confused and we're all a little raw and scared and whatnot. So it's important for us to stay together and to be connected. And whether it's, you know, via online or just, you know, text your friends, text your parents, you know, it's important for us to be apart, but still together in this trying time. Dude, I appreciate you getting on this new Zoom app that I downloaded. We were on here for like 15 minutes trying to figure it out. I feel like we're kind of like boomers trying to figure out the kids' technology, right?
Well, I guess I'm pretty much 40, so I'm just about a boomer. I'm boomer-esque.
Boomer-esque, I like it. So Darren, dude, do you have any words for Seattle audience or the metal world before we jump into the new song?
Yeah, you know, this is an album that we've been writing over the past year. It's an album where the lyrics are very, very positive. And this is going to be a good album for a lot of people to listen to at this time. And like the name Keepers of the Flame, like the flame is like the flame of humanity. It's that life force that is burning in all of us and it keeps us all alive. And you know, as long as that flame's burning, like, we're still going to be here no matter what. We're going to beat this thing and we're going to come out better on the other side. We're going to be a few less, but we're going to be stronger for it. So this album is going to be, I hope this album for everybody is kind of a beacon of light in some dark times. And I just hope that you guys enjoy it, because we've put a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of, and everything you hear on that record, man, we mean it. So we just really hope you guys like it.
Dude, I appreciate it, man. And what's this song called one more time? I'm going to let you introduce it.
As our singer Rev would say in his voice, the song is called Don't Wait for the Wizard.
Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.